This is Barry Mack from Irish Radio Australia. Let's welcome singer, songwriter, musician, and indeed a man of many talents, Gilbert O'Sullivan, on the line from, I think, London. Is that right, Gilbert? Have I got that bit right?
No, we're in the Channel Islands, Barry, in Jersey, in the Channel Islands. We're only half an hour from London. So
we're all looking forward to your visit to Australia here in March, Gilbert. We really are looking forward to it. It's been a few years from you arrived on our shores, about 14 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I came briefly with my keyboard player and a couple of girl singers just nearly over 10 years ago. So it was a very short visit, very limited, very acoustic set that we did. But the nice thing this time, and what's really exciting for me, is that I'm, for the first chance, first time I get the opportunity to bring the whole band with me. And we've been together now for many years, so I'm really excited about that. I'm looking forward, obviously, to performing for everybody over there.
What's your secret of survival? You've been doing it for a while, and I think you're a bit of a workaholic, and you seem to work under the radar.
I think that the key to what I do is everything. You know, I wouldn't be talking to you, and I wouldn't be staying in the business if it wasn't the fact that it's the love of songwriting. I mean, the songwriting is the key to everything that Gilbert O'Sullivan stands for. Without the songs, there wouldn't be an artist. And so I've always enjoyed, I just love the process of songwriting. I mean, I've never suffered from writer's block. I'm very disciplined in a kind of rule-building kind of a way that if I need to write music melodies, that I'll sit at the piano for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 4 weeks a month, till I get what it is I'm after. And likewise, with the lyrics, I'll sit down with an empty notebook, have no idea at times what it's going to be about. And then I'll get stuck into that. So the love of that is what keeps me going. It's the thing that generates almost everything else that I do. And as long as I have that, then there's no reason to stop. But if the day comes when the block appears, then I'll just take up gardening or something.
You'd be outstanding in your field, no doubt.
There you go, you said it.
Sometimes I can't help myself. Is your family musical? Do you have siblings, or are your kids taken up?
Of course I do. I'm an Irish family, so I'm one of six children. But no, I'm the only musical oddity in the family and stuff. My father got it, so it was never musical. Mum did, probably, and Mum is the one really arranged everything in terms of having a piano in the house and having the radio available to be listening to music. And there was always get-togethers. So, Irish people tend to get together quite a lot for sing-songs and stuff, although I didn't really take part in that, but that was always going on. So the Irishness is there, but no other siblings. My daughter now works for me on social media, and my eldest daughter works in music publishing, so they have a sort of musical interest, if you like. And my brother Kevin works with me. He's been with me since the middle 70s, so it's a good family connection all around.
Indeed, it's nothing like family. You're a very smart man in that you've got your daughter into. How do you cope with the IT stuff that's going on? It seems to change every week, from your iPods, your computers, your smartphones. It'd make your head dizzy, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm very computer unfriendly. The fact that my daughter runs social media, I just do as I'm told. I have no interest in it. I think there's too much information out there between you and me.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. You accept it and get on with it. And there are some good aspects to it. I think, for example, if you're a young songwriter today and you were looking for a break, you don't necessarily now have to go to a record company to get it. You can sit in a room, have your friends film you, do your song, put it up online, and it can be seen around the world. So that's pretty crazy.
It is.
So that's kind of interesting. But I think for me is I don't have an iPhone. I write songs, which really doesn't involve a lot of technology. All I need is a piano, a cassette player, and I'm off. So, albeit that I do have a purpose-built recording studio, 48-track with digital and Pro Tools, I have all that stuff, but that's only for recording purposes. The nice thing is that to write songs, as I say, all I need is a piano and a notebook, and I'm off.
And I guess the right frame of mind. Do you find that it is a compulsion? You have to sit down, you know, to at the piano. Or does it force you to do it even if you don't want to? Is it like that for you?
No, I've never felt that. I would never do it if I had to. I do it because I want to. It's discipline. I mean, the key to it, you know, I've been in the business for over 50 years now, which is, and I think part of what gets you through, it's the self-belief that's very important. I've always had this saying that you may not be as good as you think you are, but thinking you are is good. In other words, you don't look to other people to say you're good or you might be good. You know that you're good in yourself. And it's that coupled with the discipline that you put into when you sit down to try and write a song. I mean, I love the process of writing something. If I come up with a good melody, however long it takes, it's worth every minute, an hour or day that it's taken. Likewise, then you sit down to write lyrics. I mean, most, you know, if you look at the credits on records today, there's probably 4, 5, 6 different people writing the song. Mm-hmm. It's very unusual now these days to have one person doing both. But I just love it. So and that's one of the reasons I'm talking to people like yourself.
That's great. And do you write for other artists as well?
No. It's just me. I mean, I've had covers. It's a compliment to you as a songwriter of other people record your songs. Recent covers by Neil Diamond, Diana Krall, and I go way back to people like Bobby Darin, Andy Williams, all these people have covered my songs. Sarah Vaughan did a fantastic version. So that's a wonderful thing. I mean, that happens. But I've never written for other people. I'm pretty much, you know, it takes up a lot of time to write for me, so I don't have much time for other people. Not that they might be interested.
I'm sure they would be, of course. One thing I want to ask you about, you sing under your real name, and not many people are as fortunate as you in that you have a great name, Gilbert O'Sullivan. A lot of people have to make up a name for themselves, so I guess you should be thankful to your parents for that, I suppose.
Well, Raymond is my real name, so, you know, but when it came to, when I developed the image in sort of the middle 60s, you know, when long hair was here to stay, I created this Charlie Chaplin image with a Chaplin jacket, pudding basin haircut. I mean, I had a haircut then, that's now the most fashionable, but then, way back in 1966, 67, I looked like a freak.
I suppose it's the look that counts, you know, it's the image that you create that helps you along the way there too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it just dared to be different. You know, so I kind of look different and against the grain, and that's what I wanted to do. I mean, if I looked like James Taylor or looked like, you know, most of the singers at the time, I might have been more successful even. But the fact that I look such an oddity, I got away with it because of the songs. So yes, my real name is Raymond O'Sullivan. So when I decided to, when I created the image. I only call myself Gilbert, and the connection with Gilbert obviously is Gilbert and Sullivan. So therefore, I saw myself as just Gilbert, and then if you looked at the writing credit on the record, you see it was written by somebody called O'Sullivan. So I kind of liked the idea then that people would make the connection and not me. But when Gordon Mills, who managed Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck, took me on, he said that call yourself Gilbert O'Sullivan, put in your full name. So that's pretty much how
yes.
that came about.
It's just, I still remember you with your Irish hat.
Cap and boots, yeah. Well, again, it's just very, I just dared to be different. It was just, you know, nobody in every record company that I went to in 67, 68, 69, before Gordon Mills, all said, please don't look like that. Grow your hair, wear a pair of jeans, and everything will be fine. So nobody liked the image. The only person who liked it was me. And when Gordon Mills took me on, and you can imagine, you know, with Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck, the last thing you want to be managing is a guy who looked like me. But but Gordon Mills is a songwriter too, so he'd co-written It's Not Unusual for Tom Jones. And so he saw in me the songs that he knew would be the reason I would be successful. So while he didn't like the image, he went along with it. So I was grateful to him. I'm grateful to him for doing that.
Well, it's good to be different. Can you explain to me the type of music that you play? I know you do all sorts of. What would be your favourite type? What would you go to most?
Of the songs that I perform?
Yes.
Or that I listen. Well, I mean, everything. I mean, you know, if you want to be prolific as a songwriter, then you don't want to be just writing ballads. You don't just want to be writing up-tempo songs. You don't just want to be writing rock and roll songs. You want to be able to vary it. So I like to think that it's fairly comprehensive in terms of the material that I write. So, you know, and our concerts are average of 2.25, 2.5 hours. So it embraces everything from slow, fast, medium, humorous, I hope, sad.
Variety is the spice.
Variety in my songs.
Sure. Do you ever play any or sing any traditional Irish music?
No. The going back to the point about sort of, you know, leaving Ireland when I was 7 and then come to England, and all my musical background being growing up in England, listening to Radio Luxembourg and English radio. when I was successful with Nothing Rhymed, and the, you know, Ireland really took me, really embraced me hugely, I looked for the Irish connection. I started buying all the records. I had Clancy Brothers records. I had lots of Irish stuff to see if the connection was there. And to be honest, there wasn't really a connection. I mean, I know I heard Bono and U2 say that they have Irish, they have a distinct connection with the past, and maybe even Phil Lynott felt that way, and maybe even Bob Geldof felt that way. But to be honest, I didn't have that. I looked for it, but it's never taken away from my Irishness. I mean, I'm still proud of being Irish, and still proud of coming from Waterford, and I think they're proud of me. But no, there was no Irish connection, so there's no jigs in my work yet.
Well, that's okay. From what I gather, you don't need any of it. You do very well. You've heard of a singer called Joe Dolan. He didn't do any Irish stuff much either. He was into pop stuff and very, very successful. And what a magic voice that man had, too.
Yeah, Making in Ireland was a huge success for him, wasn't it, in the early 70s and stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's...
Joe Dolan, yeah.
He was a great singer.
He was a great singer, a great character. Do you enjoy collaborating with other artists? You've done a bit of that over the years.
But not really, Barry, to be honest. I mean, I've had the best collaboration that I've had was working with the iconic Peggy Lee, who was a heroine of mine, because, you know, in the early days, if you want to be a good songwriter, to learn your craft, you listen to great songs, so
yes.
the Great American Songbook. And so therefore, the best interpreters of songs on the female side are Ella Fitzgerald and Peggy Lee, and you could argue that Sinatra is the best male interpreter. So I had most all my Beatles, my Stones, and my Bob Dylan records. I had records by Peggy Lee and by Ella Fitzgerald. So in 1994, when I came up with what I thought the first time would make a nice duet, I thought, who would I approach? I didn't want to pick a contemporary singer, so I thought, well, I'll go for it. Let's see if Peggy would be interested. So we called Peggy in New York. She said she needed to hear the song, so we sent it to her. She liked it, and we flew to New York at the Record Plant recording studio, and it was a fantastic occasion, a real honor to work with her, and such an iconic figure. And because it was so special, I had it filmed for a video. Now, Peggy passed away in 2002, but the great thing is that, and we do this in the concert, we show the video, but what we do is we have Peggy singing her part on the video, and I sing my part live. So it makes for a very special little sequence in the concert. But so that arguably is the best collaboration that I've had.
That's a nice touch. That's a very good idea. I think a lot of people may have copied that.
I mean, I'm not the first either, Barry, I think, to do it. I seem to remember Natalie Cole, who's Nat King Cole's daughter.
Yes.
I think she passed away a couple of years ago, but I believe that in her concert she would have a film of her dad, and he would be singing his part, and she would be singing with him. So they can do that now with the technology.
Tell me this, do you enjoy doing what you're doing? Do you enjoy running around the world?
I don't run around that often. So
no.
If you work out my routine, it would be 9 months writing and 3 months performing, as opposed to a lot of singers who spend 11 months 11 months performing and 1 month having a holiday. The writing is the key, but it's important to get out there. It's very important. I do enjoy doing concerts, but it's on a small scale, because if I spend too much time doing the live work, then I think the writing would suffer. So within 3 months, I get to cover. We go to Japan, we go to Europe, we're all over Europe. In the UK, we'll be coming to you in March.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in America, arguably, in the second half of this year. But it'll all be within 3 to 4 months maximum and stuff. Then I'll be back to the real business of sitting at the piano and coming up with, hopefully, another bunch of songs.
Well, I'm looking at your program here, and you're in Sydney, and believe it or not, on St. Patrick's Day, you'll be in the State Theatre, which is a beautiful theatre, and I'm sure it'll be packed. The only disappointing thing there is you're only doing one show in Sydney, and that's going to be just chockers for you.
Well, I mean, it's good just to be there. I mean, as I said, the last time we went there with just a few of us, we didn't get to Sydney, and I was very disappointed about that. So that they're only doing one show. Maybe it's just one time this time, Barry, and if it goes down well, we could be back.
Oh, I've no doubt it'll go down very well. I mean, I've got no trouble remembering you, and I'm sure lots of other people are in the same boat as me, so We're definitely looking forward to it. And can I just ask you, I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you're a very busy person. I very much appreciate talking to you. It's a real delight. Will you ever retire? Or will you just keep going as long as you can put one foot in front of the other?
I think as long as I retain the love of songwriting, I think that's what keeps me going. I think if the songwriting dried up, then I'd opt out. But I think if I come up with the songs, then I need an outlet for it. It's no good writing the song and not having the opportunity to record and release. I call it the three R's: write, record, and release. And so as long as I have that facility to do that, then I'm really happy. So as yet, I haven't lost that interest. So
I don't think you ever will, and I think even if you don't want to tour later on, I think you'll be writing for other artists and they'll be very pleased. Gilbert O'Sullivan, I really do appreciate you having this chat. And
Hi, this is Gilbert O'Sullivan speaking to Barry Mack on Irish Radio Australia, Sydney.